Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true?
They don't think Christianity's true.
They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Welcome to Cross-Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. This is the first time, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you from the UK. In the studio of Premier Christian Radio with my friend Justin Brierley. For those of you that have not heard the unbelievable podcast with Justin, you are undereducated. You need to listen to this podcast. I listen to it every week. It is a debate show that originates right here in London. And Justin is the host. He's been the host for about 10 years. Those of you who have listened to this podcast for a while have heard Justin on our program before. He is the host of this debate show. It's on every week. You need to avail yourself of it. Just Google Unbelievable with Justin Brierley. And you're also going to want to get Justin's new book, which is also called Unbelievable. Imagine that. Why? After 10 years of talking with atheists, I'm still a Christian. Justin is my guest here today. Justin, it's great to be in your studio.
Thank you, Frank. And it's a joy to have you joining us here in the UK.
It is my pleasure. The people here in the UK are wonderful. Last night, I had the opportunity to speak at John Newton's church. Yes, the John Newton that was the slave trader who became a Christian and wrote probably the most famous hymn of all time, Amazing Grace.
Yeah. Extraordinary story, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a wonderful city, and there is so much Christian heritage here.
You just only have to dig under the surface a little, and you'll find just how extraordinary the heritage is of London in particular when it comes to the Christian faith and the way it's impacted the world globally.
This is what the Christian Heritage Group has done. It's a group here in London that I had the opportunity to speak to, the privilege of speaking to last night, and so we decided that we would record the Cross-Examine podcast right here in London, so we didn't have to deal with all those crazy Skype issues. So, Justin, for those of you or for those in our listening audience who don't really know who you are, how did you get to where you are? I mean, you are really the host of one of the most listened to apologetics broadcasts in the world. How did you get to where you are?
Well, to be honest, when I started the Unbelievable radio show and podcast, I really hadn't heard of the word apologetics, if I'm honest. It was a concept that obviously I got to know pretty quickly. But the fact is, from its outset, I guess you could say that Unbelievable has always been a bit different from your usual way of doing apologetics.
Right.
Now, you know, we're familiar that apologetics is defense of the Christian faith. And there's lots of great resources out there, lots of brilliant books and radio shows and podcasts, which, you know, put the case for Christianity and the critiques of atheism and other worldviews out there. But what Unbelievable has been doing is actually bringing them together for dialogue and debate. And that's quite different. And it's a little bit dangerous sometimes, because you're going to hear the other point of view pushing back against Christianity. And so when we began this radio show, it's actually more like 11 and a half years ago now, believe it or not. It was very much an experiment, you know, how with this would go down, A, with a Christian audience, you know, on a Christian radio station. And what we couldn't see at that time, though, was the way it would take off around the world as a podcast, because podcasting was really in its infancy when the show began. But as soon as it did start to get broadcast as a podcast around the world, suddenly Christians and non-Christians started picking it up all over the world. That's why, obviously, a lot of the listeners are now in North America, Canada, Australia, other parts of the world. So that's really where it all began. I went to the station manager saying, I know we do a great job here at Premier Christian Radio talking about Christian matters to other Christians. Could we get out of the bubble a bit, though, and actually start addressing some non-Christians? And that might be uncomfortable listening sometimes, but I think it would be really, really helpful.
And you said that you initially had some pushback from Christians who were saying, we don't need to hear atheist arguments on the Christian show. How did you respond to that?
Yeah, they said, we've got enough of them on the BBC. And that was understandable, and I completely get that, because, you know, you don't expect necessarily to tune into a Christian radio station and hear some cherished doctrine being assailed by a skeptic. But the fact is, I think what happened in the end was people who don't really appreciate it, it's not their cup of tea, they learn to kind of skip that 90-minute segment on a Saturday afternoon, which is its broadcast slot. But a lot of other people found it really helpful and said, I really like the fact that we're going to engage with people with different worldviews, because that's the reality of the world we live in. It's harder and harder to live in a Christian bubble anymore, let's face it, with the advent of Facebook, the internet and everything else. If you're a Christian, your beliefs will get questioned. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather host that kind of a discussion where you've got a good Christian response than simply leave it to Christians to try and kind of work it out for themselves, depending on which websites they hit online, you know.
Well, you've really had to have educated yourself to be the host of this program, because it's much easier just to do a podcast like I normally do, because I know where I'm going. I know what I'm talking about. I don't have to have anybody giving me a contrary point of view. Mm-hmm. But you as a host, you're going to have a Christian and normally an atheist on board. How did you get to the point where you knew enough about the issues on both sides in order to facilitate a good dialogue?
It's something definitely that was a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And when I began, I was very green when it comes to a lot of these issues, wet behind the ears. I was very much learning as I went in the early years of the show, and realizing what the key issues were in the first place to be debated, what the red herrings are that are often brought up in these debates, who the key people are on both sides of the debate to have for these kinds of discussions. And so, you know, in the process of doing that, I think it also gave me a huge education myself in theology and apologetics, helped me in a way to start to understand where I stood on some of these important issues, helped me to kind of whittle down to what I think are some of the key arguments in favor of Christianity and against atheism. And that's sort of where it felt like, after 10 plus years of doing the show, I was in a position then to write a book saying, mm-hmm. I've heard the objections, mm-hmm. and this is where I think the key frontiers lie, and why I believe Christianity really is ultimately a better explanation.
And the new book is called Unbelievable by Justin Brierley, Brierley. If you don't know how to spell it, you do now. Just Google it. You can find it, I'm sure, on Amazon and anywhere fine books are sold. And if you go to your bookstore and it's not there, it's just probably sold out again.
Right? We've actually got a website as well for the book.
Do we? What is it?
Unbelievablebook.co.uk.
Unbelievablebook.co.uk. Check that out as well. And this is a very easy read, Justin.
Thank you. You
privileged me by sending it to me in advance, and I put an endorsement on it. And so many other people put endorsements on it.
Yeah, I was really privileged. Tim Keller was willing mm-hmm. to endorse it, and he's
Tim
been
Keller. What does he know? Come on.
Well, I'm a big fanboy of Tim Keller.
I am too. Yeah.
Because he's been on the show a number of times uh-huh. over the years. He is, of course, in many ways a pastor to the skeptics, if you like. He's you know,
tremendous.
Seen such an amazing ministry he's had in Manhattan, a very skeptical place, but yet mm-hmm. seen his church grow, been willing to engage with the cultural issues there. And so he wonderfully, he's, you know, really recognized, I think, the value of Unbelievable, of bringing different voices together for that kind of dialogue and debate. Alistair McGrath, John Lennox, and of course people like yourself.
You even got atheists like Michael Ruse on here.
Yes, well, I thought it would make sense to do that, because obviously Unbelievable has always been, you know, this talking house for atheists and Christians. So, and many atheists over the years have expressed their appreciation for the show, because they feel it does deal fairly mm-hmm. with the issues. They do feel like they're well represented.
They are.
And Michael Ruse is one of the friendliest atheists you could meet, actually.
Yes. And
he's a great fun as well whenever he's come on the program.
You got Gary Habermas, who loves the book.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Johnson loves the book. Andy Bannister loves the book. Donald Trump says that Justin Brierley is making Christianity great again. This is amazing.
I'm not sure about that last one.
Okay, all right. Well, Justin, no, this is a very readable book, and it's easy to understand. And the beauty of it is, you not only have the Christian arguments in here, but you respond to the atheistic counter arguments, which is so valuable.
And the way I try and do that in the book is obviously by simply telling stories of some of the encounters mm-hmm, that we've mm-hmm. had on the show between mm-hmm. Christians and atheists over the years. And in that way, I think it makes it more accessible, because you're not just talking about, you know, abstract ideas. You're talking about real people mm-hmm. who have come on and debated these issues. And there's all kinds of personalities involved.
Let's get to the personalities right after the break. We're talking to my friend Justin Brierley. His new book is Unbelievable. Brand new book, hot off the presses. You need to get it. You're not going to want to go away. We've got three segments with Justin all the way from the UK. So don't go away. I'm Frank Turek, back in two.
Thank you for listening to the Cross Examine podcast. This material is made available to you for free by the contributions of listeners like you. If you wish to support future podcasts, just go to crossexamine.org and click on the donate button, or simply use the donate feature directly on our app. Thanks.
Welcome back to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. If you're low on the FM dial looking for National Public Radio, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. You're not going to hear this on NPR. My guest today is Justin Brierley, who is, as you know, as you should know if you don't, the host of Unbelievable, the debate program that originates from right here in the UK. That's where we're coming to you from today, from the UK, from London. And the program is fabulous because he not only has Christians on the program, but atheists on the program, skeptics, agnostics, makes for a very lively program. Justin is a very great host who is able to facilitate these conversations with great skill. And he's had the best Christians, the best atheists on. And when you listen to the program, you'll see that it is a very thought-provoking program, and when you're done, you can pick up his new book called Unbelievable. Now, Justin, here's the question everybody asks you, so I want to get an answer straight from you, because you have heard the best arguments on both sides for 11 and a half years now, and you started as a Christian, and you're still a Christian.
I am.
How? I mean, don't the atheists have a point? I mean, well, how are you still a Christian? What's going on here?
I'm not going to stand here and say I've never sort of encountered anything that hasn't given me pause for thought, and certainly, you know, I've had to wrestle with issues, especially in the early years when I was completely new to a lot of the objections that were being leveled at Christianity, and there were, you know, some sleepless nights along the way, if I'm honest. But in a way, I've come out of the other side, if you like, feeling more confident than when I began, because I think there's a process you go through. And I don't know if this is familiar with you, Frank, but sometimes, although your faith can get tested and shaken, that process itself can actually toughen and kind of make a less brittle faith, because you weather some of those storms and you come through the other side. I mean, my story is that I became a Christian on the basis of an experience I had of God, in common with many people, I'm sure. Some people, it's a wham-bam moment. For others, it's just a deep knowing that there is a God and a belief in Christ. I was one of those wham-bam moments, and I had this experience as a teenager which turned me onto God and where I, you know, loved Jesus and I wanted to tell people about him. But of course, pretty soon, you know, university days, those kinds of things, I was soon met by a lot of skeptics, people who didn't share that worldview. And I quickly learned that it's one thing to believe something, it's another thing to try and show others who haven't had your experience what that looks like. Now, for some people, they don't need lots of arguments and evidence. You know, they're happy to kind of take, you know, to hear someone's testimony and be inspired enough to go and look into it for themselves. And maybe that's their route. But a lot of my friends were not of that kind. And so inevitably, I had to face up to some of these questions and objections that people had. And in the end, by doing the radio show, I kind of fully immersed myself into that world. And yeah, I've heard some really hard objections over the years. I guess one of the key things I've learned, though, and this is something obviously you've written about a lot yourself, Frank, is that I soon realized that there are two worldviews here. It's not just that Christianity is making all these claims about God and the supernatural and the Bible. Actually, the atheist themselves is not some kind of neutral observer who you're just waiting to be convinced by you. They themselves have a worldview. They themselves believe things about the way life is, the universe is, where we came from, whether there's goodness in the world, whether there's any purpose to life and that kind of thing. And I realized, well, that person has to defend their point of view just as much as I'm called to defend my point of view. This isn't some kind of idea that the burden of proof is all on the Christians in that sense. And that kind of thinking really helped me then to understand that we're all looking for the best explanation of the world, the universe we find ourselves in. And the question is, does atheism offer a good explanation? And having looked at it in the balance, I came to the view that no, actually, I just don't think so many things don't add up on a naturalistic worldview, the materialistic worldview. Christianity has an explanation for so many things that makes more sense to me than atheism. That doesn't mean there aren't mysteries,
sure,
questions still unresolved, things that, you know, we may never know this side of eternity. But ultimately, I felt there was far more there that enables me to say, yeah, this makes sense ultimately of our experience.
What of the atheistic arguments do you find most troubling or most persuasive for their side?
Yeah, inevitably, suffering is you know, that's been around since the year dot, hasn't it? The issue of suffering and evil. And many Christians, many atheists will struggle with the whole issue of suffering. And for me, that's certainly, at an emotional level, the one that I think carries the most weight.
Right.
It's very hard to for someone who's been through terrible suffering to kind of simply wish away that aspect of their experience by giving them some kind of philosophical answer. Because ultimately, it is very hard to come to terms with suffering if you believe there's a good God out there. I do believe there are answers. But obviously, it's one of those issues where the emotional, the way it can often be put emotionally by a skeptic or an atheist, can really cause a Christian to stumble and not really know what to say in response to that. So I remember one of the very first shows I did, you know, this is way back in the first few months of the show, and we did Suffering and Evil for the first time. And I had Dan Barker on the line, who's an American atheist, and he just gave a very eloquent description of, you know, walking through a child cancer ward and says, how on earth can you tell me that there's a God when this kind of suffering exists? And that hits you at the core,
sure.
You know. Now, as I say, I do believe there are answers to that. I devote a chapter in the book to talking about the issue of suffering. But at the same time, it would be facile of me to say this doesn't hit us in the core when we have to deal with these kinds of issues.
Mm. Yes, and there are, as you mentioned, two answers to the suffering problem. There's the philosophical answer and the pastoral answer. And you don't want to give a philosophical answer to somebody who is dealing with pain and suffering. They're in the midst of it because it's not going to resonate with them.
The thing is,
comfort.
For me, though, I mean, this was most poignantly raised, I think, by one of our own TV presenters, and his name is Stephen Fry. You might have heard of him.
Oh, yes, I know Stephen,
USA.
Sure. Know of him. Yeah.
He's a very well-known comedian, TV personality over here. He's well-known as an atheist as well. And he did this interview that went viral with an Irish TV channel, where he kind of did this kind of diatribe against God and because of suffering and so on. And I did a kind of video response to Stephen, where I actually took one of the stories of his favorite author, Oscar Wilde, The Selfish Giant, which is fundamentally a Christian story about a giant who is a selfish giant, and he won't let any children play in his garden. It's always winter. It's a bit like Narnia almost, and never spring in his garden until one day a child enters and spring comes because he allows the child to pick an apple. And for me, there was something about that story that says we do live in a world of you know, winter, this kind of hardness and this evil that exists. But only Christianity gives us hope that there's going to be a redemption. Mm. Atheism doesn't give us any hope that anything's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't provide meaning. Suffering just is meaningless. There is no meaning. And I'm not saying that there's easy answers with Christianity, but at least we have this hope that there is a God who stepped into our suffering.
That's right.
And that's what happens in the story of the selfish giant, and actually gives us an opportunity to experience what the world might look like if it came back to his into his kingdom. So that's just a very brief summary, really, of some of where I go with the book on this issue. I mean, there have been other issues, academic issues, which have certainly given me pause for thought. I remember the first time I had Bart Ehrman on the show.
Yes.
And now, if you're familiar with Bart Ehrman, he's a well-known skeptic of Christianity. He's a Bible scholar himself. He was a Christian at one time, but he lost his faith. And he's made, he's a very popular author at the popular level as well as academically for his critiques of the Bible and the reliability of the New Testament and so on. The first time I had him on, he was talking about his best-selling book, Misquoting Jesus, in which he claims that we can't know what the original text is of parts of the New Testament because of the manuscript tradition and the way it was copied and, you know, then passed down over the centuries, and that there's so many variations in the different manuscripts we have, it casts doubt. And I read his book in preparation for the show, and this was over a Christmas period, and it made me think, wow, this guy's got a point. I don't know what to think right now.
Right,
there's a
right.
sort of how what's this going to go like when I get him on the program?
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, in the end, I had him on with Peter J. Williams, who's the warden of Tyndale House in Cambridge, a brilliant Bible scholar in his own right. And it was one of those experiences where, you know, there's that proverb, isn't there, about, you know, you hear a case and you're convinced and then someone else gives the other side, right, and suddenly things look different. And it was exactly like that, because Peter showed brilliantly, I think, how actually so many of the criticism Bart has of the transmission of the Bible are actually also its most wonderful defense, because it's because we have so many texts and because they actually have these discrepancies that we're actually able to do the detective work of getting back to the original, what the original said. And actually, if you go and then read Bart's book properly, you'll understand the number of issues he actually raises is you could count on about one hand the actual areas where he thinks there's some uncertainty of. And even in those, he thinks he knows what it probably was originally. So what you end up with is realizing actually, this is a brilliantly attested piece, you know, these documents that we can go back and find by this detective work what the originals actually said. And that's almost unheard of in literature of that time. It's phenomenal that we have this kind of textual criticism transmission approach, which gives us access to. So it was one of those ones where you hear one thing, then you hear the opposite side and you realize there isn't an issue here.
In fact, he even admitted in the second edition of Misquoting Jesus, Bart Ehrman did, that in an interview in the very back of the book, it's actually on page 252, because I quoted quite a bit, where he basically says, I agree with Bruce Metzger, my mentor, that the New Testament tradition is sound. He said that the main things we believe in as Christians are secure in the scriptures, or that Christians believe are secure in the scriptures. So he wound up coming to the conclusion that we do know what the New Testament documents really said.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you hear something thrown out like, oh, there are X many thousand variations between the New Testament documents. And you think, wow, that sounds terrible. Well, actually, when you the scholars will tell you that's not a problem.
It's actually
a strength in an odd way. So that was an interesting experience. And we've had Bart on again several times over the years.
I know. You had him with Richard Baucom.
Richard Baucom. We had him talking about memory and eyewitness testimony. We've had him on with Mike Lacona talking about the resurrection. And what's interesting with Bart, like many agnostic or secular scholars, is he agrees with so many issues around the resurrection in terms of, you know, he would affirm the view that the disciples really did have what they believed were experiences of the risen Christ. Now, the question is, how does he account for that as a non-Christian, as someone who doesn't believe you can invoke a supernatural explanation? And what's interesting is that he obviously says, well, there must be a naturalistic explanation.
But he won't bank on one, or he won't suggest one, because he knows as soon as he does, Christians are going to say, well, that has flaws and here are the flaws. And maybe we can get into that after the break. We're talking to Justin Brierley. His new book is unbelievable. You need to get this book. It is very well written. It has stories in it, like Justin's been telling us here today, that will help you understand why Christianity is true. And if you have a skeptical friend, it will help them as well. So you need to get it. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Justin Brierley about this fabulous new book, Unbelievable. I'm Frank Turek. Back in just 2 minutes. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network, coming to you all the way from the UK today. My guest is Justin Brierley. He is the host of the Unbelievable broadcast, which is really unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. He has Christians and atheists dialoguing. He's been doing this for over 11 years now. If you haven't availed yourself of the podcast, you need to do that. Just Google. In fact, Justin, where can they go to just...
Well,
hear the podcast.
If you want the show, it's available from our website. That's premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Okay.
That'll take you to the show. There's also videos, features, blogs, and of course, links to the book as well.
And people don't know this who listen to your program. Well, maybe they do if they listen enough, but doing the radio program is only a part-time job for you. You are doing a magazine here in the UK. What is that called?
It's called Premier Christianity Magazine. It's a monthly title. I guess the US equivalent might be Christianity Today.
And so,
it's a magazine primarily read by evangelical Christians here in the UK, though we have a website which obviously reaches around the world as well. And yeah, I've been doing that job just over 3 years now. I've been a writer for the magazine for longer than that as well. And it's been a real joy, a real interesting learning curve as well, because I started out really just in radio broadcasting and gradually picked up the skills of print journalism as well along the way, because we're blessed here at Premier that we're not just a radio station. In fact, we're three radio stations, but we're also a couple of magazine titles. Mm-hmm. We do events, we do video and lots of other stuff. And so, being able to pick up the editorship of the magazine was a great privilege. We do all kinds of issues there. We obviously cover apologetics, but we also talk about evangelism, church growth. We talk about the culture. Mm-hmm. We talk about politics. Obviously, we're just at the process of going through a general election here in the UK at the time we're recording this, Frank, and so there's all of those issues. We try to inform Christians, we try to keep them, you know, ahead of the cultural pulse, and you know, we also obviously look at world affairs as well. So,
well, you've been very good at getting the best guests from both sides on. How come the atheists are so amenable to coming on your program, do you think?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's partly because the show has, you know, I'm glad to say, established a reputation of being fairly even-handed when mm-hmm. it comes to the debates. And I think that's really important. My own role is to try and facilitate those debates fairly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there sometimes I will have had emails from listeners, atheists or Christians, who said, I listened to a few episodes of the show, Justin, and I wasn't able to tell to start with whether you were a Christian or not, you know, I'm trying to be impartial in that sense. And to give both sides a say, mm-hmm. and help to facilitate that dialogue. Now, obviously, anyone who listens for long will realize I am a Christian, and obviously I have my biases, and I'm sure they come into play at regular points. But I do try to create that kind of a level playing field, because I think that's really important. I think that once you do that, skeptics and atheists who come on, they'll feel I'm open then to having an honest conversation. Now, every atheist is different, and they all have different personalities, just mm-hmm. as much as Christians do. And mm-hmm. and some will come in, you know, wanting to have a real fight, a bit of argy-bargy. Others will come on being, you know, very open to spirituality or Christianity at some level, but they just haven't quite been convinced themselves, and everything in between. And what I find is that when you actually sit down and have a conversation, you have a much different experience to, say, the kind of online debates you have in chat rooms and the kinds of things that go on there, because there, I think the anonymity of being behind a computer screen and avatar means that the worst tends to come out with
right.
people often.
Right.
But if you're sitting opposite someone having a conversation, it's much harder to be rude to someone in mm-hmm. that context. Mm-hmm. And I think you have potentially a lot more fruitful debate a lot of the mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, it's very well done. The show is unbelievable. And the new book is unbelievable. Why, after 10 years of talking with atheists, I'm still Christian. I'm still a Christian, says Justin Brierley. He's my guest today on Cross Examine. Now, Justin, in the book, you've got several chapters that talk about why you're a Christian. For example, the first three chapters, chapters 2 through 4, say, God makes sense of human existence. God makes sense of human value. God makes sense of human purpose. Let's talk about human value, that chapter.
Yeah.
Why do you think God makes most sense of human value? And how would atheists respond to that?
I mean, let me tell a story from the show then. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, the British Humanist Association, an atheist association here in the UK, with Richard Dawkins' help, ran a bus campaign. It was called the Atheist Bus Campaign.
I remember.
And the slogan on the sides of the buses running around London was, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." Mm-hmm. Now that got a lot of publicity, obviously. And I had one of the creators of that campaign come on the show to talk to us about it. Her name's Ariane Shireen, a young atheist journalist who was the brains behind it. And I had a really interesting discussion with her, with a Christian guest in the studio as well. And ultimately, I put the question to her. Ariane, you know, she was talking about the fact that, you know, religion, you know, causes wars, causes suffering mm-hmm. and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I said, she was talking about the situation in Darfur, where there are terrible things being perpetrated against women and children. And I said, when it comes to a soldier entering a house and raping the woman there, I mean, do you think that is wrong? Do you think, you know, and she said, yeah, well, of course it's wrong. Of course it's wrong. And I said to her, well, as an atheist, how do you ground that? You know, how can you say that rape is wrong when ultimately we are just, you know, there's no ultimate grounding for that. Mm-hmm. There's no transcendent moral law out there. That's just the way that soldier happens to be acting in his interests versus the interests. And she got in something of a fluster at that point in terms of she'd never really engaged actually with the issue of where you know real right and wrong might come from. She wanted to affirm obviously that rape is wrong and it was terrible, but she wasn't able to give me an exact reason for why that's wrong on an atheist worldview. And that was a really interesting conversation because at the end of the day, that bus slogan doesn't hold out much hope for the widow in Darfur who's being raped. You know, there's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life. Yeah, it's right, like, sure, it's like that, and that doesn't quite work somehow for many people in the world. Actually, what if, despite the terrible things that happen in the world, God is the only hope for some people of there being a day of redemption and justice? You know, the people who drew the shortest straws in the world, God may be the only way in which they will see their lives redeemed, restored, and true justice done in the world. And for me, this is a key difference, is that human, the value that we all seem to affirm in human beings, it's very hard to understand where that's come from on an atheistic worldview. I've never heard a satisfactory response to that. And so in the book, you know, I tell the conversation I had with Richard Dawkins on this level, which again revolved around this issue of rape. Now, it's a grim material, of course it is, but when it's coming to real right and wrong, we do often have to go to the examples where we can all agree this is wrong. And this took place in the context of a debate that Dawkins had had with John Lennox, well-known Christian thinker, both Oxford professors. They'd had this debate in Oxford, sponsored by the Fixed Point Foundation, and I was fortunate enough to get interviews with them both afterwards at a reception party afterwards. And this was the first time I'd ever met Richard Dawkins, and I was rather nervous, I will admit. The room was abuzz with conversation, and I stepped up to him with my microphone and said, "Professor Dawkins, may I have a quick word with you about the debate that took place?" And he said yes. And so I stood there with my microphone, and we talked about some of the issues that had come up with, you know, whether, you know, the universe is evidence for God and that kind of thing. But we got to the issue of morality, which had also been discussed. And I said to him, I asked him, if you believe that rape is wrong, right? And he said, "Well, yes, I do believe that." In fact, I'll read out the passage because I want to I want to make sure that I quote this correctly, because this, for me, this conversation that I had with Dawkins was kind of encapsulated where I think he was being true. I think he's absolutely right that this is the way you have to view morality if there is no God. But for me, it was one of those experiences where it, for me, encapsulated why the atheist view of morality doesn't make sense. So here's how the interaction went at this point. If we'd evolved into a society where rape was considered fine, would that mean rape is fine? And Dawkins responded, "I don't want to answer that question."
Of course he doesn't.
"It's enough for me to say," I'm trying not to do the Richard Dawkins accent here, "but it's enough for me to say that we live in a society where it's not considered fine. We live in a society where selfishness, failure to pay your debts, failure to reciprocate favours is regarded askance. That is the society in which we live. I'm very glad. That's a value judgment. Glad that I live in such a society." And I responded, "But when you make a value judgment, don't you yourself immediately step outside this evolutionary process and say that the reason this is good is that it's good, and you don't have any way to stand on that statement?" And he responded, "My value judgment itself could come from my evolutionary past." And I said, "Well, therefore, it's just as random in a sense as any product of evolution." And he said, "You could say that. In any case, nothing about it makes it more probable that there's anything supernatural." And I said, "Okay, but ultimately, your belief that rape is wrong is as arbitrary as the fact that we've evolved five fingers rather than six." And he finished by saying, "You could say that, yeah."
In fact, that was such a great exchange I had with him. I actually put it in my book, Stealing from God, because he actually has admitted that there's no grounding for this. Yet he has this sense that rape is wrong, and I think obviously he's right about that. The question is, why is it wrong, as you pointed out, on atheism? In fact, Dawkins has that famous quote, I can't remember exactly where it's from, where he says, "This is exactly the world we'd kind of expect. Yeah. If there is no, there's no justice, there's no evil, there's no good, there's just blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. We just dance to its music."
And for me, he's absolutely right. If naturalism is true, if atheism is true, he's absolutely describing the universe. But it's not a universe I recognize. I do see moral right and wrong. It's obvious. It's as plain as the nose on the end of my face.
That's right.
I do see truth, beauty, love, hope, purpose. All of these things are things we can't live without as humans. Mm-hmm. And yet he claims that none of them actually exist. And for me, it's almost like staring something in the face and claiming it's not mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's why, you know, as I develop in those opening chapters, why Christianity and God is a better explanation of the fact we do recognize the existence of human value, of purpose, of existence. Human existence mm-hmm. itself, I think, is better explained right. by God than atheism, because of the evidence for the fine tuning of the universe, the cosmological argument, mm-hmm. the fact we can do science at all, which is an extraordinary fact about our universe that mm-hmm. just begs a huge question, doesn't it, of why we happen to live in a universe that just seems so fertile for us to be able to engage with rationally. I mean, it didn't have to be that way, and yet it is. Mm. For me, these are all fingerprints, if you like, of God on a cosmic scale.
Yeah, the very ability to even know truth and to ascertain truths about the real world presupposes an idea that we have a mind and we're not just a brain. It presupposes that we are conscious creatures who can reason to a conclusion, and that doesn't make any sense on an atheistic perspective. As you pointed out in your dialogue with Dawkins, why believe any of this if atheism's true? If our thoughts are just the product of an evolutionary random process, then we shouldn't even believe in those thoughts.
And C.S. Lewis made that argument brilliantly.
Oh, he did. And in fact, let's talk about that after the break, Justin. Yeah. We're coming up to it right now for our final segment. The new book is called Unbelievable with Justin Brierley. He is the host of the program by the same name. But you need to get the book, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. And I'm Frank Turek. I'll be back in just 2 minutes with another segment with Justin. Don't go away.
If you find value in the content of this podcast, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you can find more. Just type CrossExamine or Frank Turek on the search bar. Also, visit our website, where we add new videos, articles, and free resources daily.
Welcome back to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. Before I forget, this August 8 to 10 in Dallas, Texas, the 10th annual Cross Examine Instructors Academy, CIA. In fact, we may be full already. I don't know. I got to check with Jorge on this. But if you're interested at all in coming to CIA and getting trained by some of the world's greatest apologists, including Greg Kokel, J. Warner Wallace, Brett Kunkel, Sean McDowell, Bobby Conway, Richard Howe, several others, you're going to want to be a part of CIA, the Cross-Examined Instructor Academy. So go to our website, crossexamined.org, click on events, you'll see CIA there. Check it out. It's not cheap, but it is worth it. In fact, we have people coming back every year to go through the program again. You'll not only learn how to present evidence for Christianity, you'll learn how to answer the toughest questions out there. We're not only going to present to you, you're going to present to us. So be ready, CIA. It's in Dallas in August, and we're having it in Dallas in August because hell was booked. Sorry. We wanted to have it in the center of the country so our friends could get there more easily. So I hope you can join us. But we have a final segment here with my friend Justin Brierley, and his new book is Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. If you haven't listened to the podcast, you need to avail yourself of it because it's a fabulous way of getting the best arguments on both sides of the debate. Justin does a wonderful job of being the moderator of this, but now he's taken off his moderator hat and he's got a new book that explains why he's still a Christian, very accessible, very well written, very well argued. Not a book that will take you all that long to read, about 200 pages. So this is a book you can give to anyone, and I'd highly encourage you to do so. Now, Justin, what's the website for the book again?
Unbelievablebook.co.uk. And you did mention, I'm hoping that this will both be picked up by Christians and non-Christians, the kind of book, as you say, that a Christian could give a non-Christian mm-hmm. friend who's got a kind of skeptical, inquiring mind. Mm-hmm. Because I hope that I've addressed both of those people in the course of writing the book. I consciously have had both of those in my mind when I've been writing it, because I've always got both of those in mind when I'm hosting the radio show. I know that there are Christians listening, but lots of non-Christians listening too. And for me, the tone you set then is really important, because you don't just want to be preaching to the choir.
No.
In that sense, you need to be actually saying, how is this going to be being received by a non-Christian who doesn't share my particular commitment?
And it's going to be received in perpetuity, because it's podcasted and you can go back years.
Yeah.
And these shows are evergreen. That's what I like about them. They're not normally current event shows.
Exactly. And I think that's actually partly why the archive continues to be so well, you know, downloaded, in a sense, going back, 8 or 9 years now, of shows, hundreds of shows. I think, well, we had our 500th episode of the show with Tom Wright, actually, last year, on the podcast, that is. And that's right. We tried to do subjects which kind of, you know, are just as relevant today as they were 10 years ago. We've obviously done a number of the subjects from different angles many times over the years as well. So anyone who listens, and I get people who start listening to the show and say, I've just been kind of binge listening now, you know, and I'm 4 years in, and, and I'm thinking, wow, that person, you know, they've heard way too much of my voice after listening to all those shows in a row.
Well, in the book, we had in the previous segment talked about why God makes the best sense of human value. What about this chapter you have in here about facts that only fit the resurrection? What's that about, Justin?
I mean, this has been one of the big revelations for me in doing Unbelievable. When I started the show, I probably would have told you, yeah, the resurrection, I believe in the resurrection, but I wouldn't have been able to tell you that there's any objective evidence, really, for the resurrection again. And this is something that I was just, you know, so excited to learn about in the course of hosting debates between scholars on both sides of this, and meeting people like Gary Habermas and Michael Lacona, who have been at the forefront, really, of defending what's often called the minimal facts, a hypothesis for the resurrection. For those who are unfamiliar, their basic thing is, we're not going to try and defend, you know, the inerrancy of scripture or that kind of thing. They're saying, we're going to put that to one side and just say, let's just look at what the vast majority of Bible scholars, believing or non-believing, say is a historically true, a historical fact about the documents that we have here. And what they were able to show is that the vast majority of scholars all affirm see central facts, and there's maybe 5, 6, or 7 of them, depending on how you order them. But they would include things like Jesus died by crucifixion, that he was, his empty tomb was discovered by a group of his women followers. It would include that the followers of Jesus claimed to have experiences of the risen Christ. It would also include the fact that the early church had experienced an explosive growth. And so take those four facts, for instance, and what you're doing is saying, okay, everyone across the board basically agrees that these are well-attested facts of history. What's the best explanation
for them?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Throughout the book, what I'm asking the reader to do is say, what's the best explanation for this? You know, the fact we all seem to believe in this idea of human value, the fact we all believe that there's some kind of purpose to life and so on. And again, I'm asking them to do the same with this, saying, okay, what's the best explanation of this set of facts? And for me, the best explanation is the one that the first Christians gave. Jesus had risen. Okay, now, we've already had this conversation slightly earlier, but when I do have agnostic or skeptical Bible scholars on, very often the objection they will say is, look, I agree with these facts, but I cannot agree that the best explanation is the resurrection, because that's not allowed in historical inquiry.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're opening the door to all kinds of, you know, miraculous, supernatural explanations for historical events. So we just have to. But for me, that the problem is that assumes that we do history with an assumption that there is no God.
It begs the question.
And I kind of, in the chapter there, just draw the distinction between, you know, methodological naturalism and a sort of an ontological kind of naturalism, where you're saying, with methodological naturalism, that's maybe you pursue the scientific thing, kind of assuming that things will follow natural law-like patterns. But that doesn't mean that's all that exists. It's just that that's the best way of pursuing that particular. And it may be that if we do have evidence that there is a God, maybe the resurrection is one instance in the whole of history where the best explanation really is a supernatural one. And I think if you're open to the idea of the supernatural, it's perfectly easy then to walk through the door of saying, this is the best explanation for this set of facts.
Well, if the first verse of the Bible is true, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, then certainly a resurrection is possible. The greatest miracle in the Bible is the first verse. And as you point out here in the book, Unbelievable, we're talking to Justin Brierley, his new book is called Unbelievable, that God makes the best sense of human existence. There was a big bang. There was a creation event. Mm. And if there's a creation event, whatever created space, matter, and time can't be made of space, matter, and time. In other words, the being must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful to create the universe out of nothing, personal in order to choose to create, intelligent, because as you point out, and you're doing a video, by the way, about using dice, that the universe is fine-tuned. You can check out that video on YouTube. But in any event, if that verse is true, Justin, a resurrection's easy to believe. And these atheists are ruling it out in advance. And what we mentioned earlier, I think is true. In fact, I asked Mike Lacone about this. I went online looking for Bart Ehrman's explanation. And it seems that Bart Ehrman has backed off any possible naturalistic explanation for the resurrection. In other words, he won't identify one.
No.
Because he knows that any of them he identifies have fatal flaws. Mm. So he says, well, I won't go for a resurrection, but I don't know what happened.
Yeah. He's agnostic.
Yeah.
But he still seems to rule out any supernatural explanation.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, obviously, and obviously, when I do the shows and we discuss these things, there's always pushback, you know, good arguments on both sides from atheists who come on and skeptics and so on. And I'm just in the book laying out where my cards fall now and why I do think that there's really good reasons to be a Christian. Now, I'm not expecting every atheist who comes on to agree.
No, of course
they don't.
No.
But I would hope that any atheist who maybe is tuning in, who's kind of come along with the assumption Christianity is just a load of fairy tales and stuff and nonsense, at least they might hear something which makes them think, actually, there's something more to this. I may not have been convinced at this point, but actually, it's not as crazy as I was led to believe it is. And for me, even if that's just the first step towards pushing the door open,
right?
For me, that's a good start.
Well, you do a great job on the program, Unbelievable. And the new book is also called Unbelievable by Justin Brierley, B-R-I-E-R-L-E-Y. Check it out. It's just out this month, so you need to pick it up right now. And Justin, we just got a couple of minutes left. I do want to get to the point of the last chapter in the book where you say choosing to live in the Christian story of reality. What's that about? Give us a minute or two on
well,
that.
Well, I just wanted to end by encouraging those who are reading the book, Christian or non-Christian, that apologetics isn't the point ultimately. Mm-hmm. And some people, unfortunately, do make apologetics a bit of an idol or theology or whatever, thinking that it's all about winning an intellectual argument. It's not. It's about winning a person to Christ. And for me, It's as much about how we do our apologetics as the strength of our arguments. And that's been really important for me in the show. But it's also about inviting people into a different worldview. We started by talking about worldviews. And for me, when you put on the Christian worldview, it changes the way you view the whole of reality. And that's really important. And part of the challenge, I think, is not just inviting atheists to kind of prod Christianity intellectually from the outside, but actually asking them to step inside. And it was what I think it was Augustine who said, credo ut intelligam, I believe in order to understand. There's something about actually stepping into the worldview that actually suddenly the lights go on.
That's right.
It was the C.S. Lewis famously put it as, you know, I believe in Christianity as I believe in the sun, not just because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. And for me, that's been very true in my life. You have to take that step of faith, and it is always going to be a step of faith, of stepping into the Christian worldview and testing it and seeing, will it actually make sense once I've stepped inside? And I believe that for every honest seeker, Jesus says, I am here. Open the door. I'll step inside.
If Christianity were true, friends, would you become a Christian? That's the question you need to ask yourself. If it really were true, unfortunately, Justin, I've had many atheists say no. Because it's not an issue of the mind, it's an issue of the will. They don't want it to be true. And really, morality comes into it. That's the issue. They don't want there to be a moral authority other than themselves. That's a real problem.
And I think you get atheists of different types, and definitely that would apply to many I've met, who said, you know, I'd spit in God's face if I saw him. And that ultimately is not an intellectual objection. That's an emotional rejection.
That is. Justin, this is a wonderful book. It's called Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. Thanks for doing this book, Justin, for doing the program every week.
Thank you for having me on, Frank. It's been great.
Justin Brierley, ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure having him on all the way from the UK today. You need to pick up his book. Give the book title or the book website again.
Unbelievablebook.co.uk.
You need to get it, friends. excellent read, easy to read. Give it to your friends, even your non-Christian friends. You won't regret it. I'm Frank Turek, crossexamine.org. Back next week. God bless.